When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. We are your hosts. I'm Kim France.
And I'm Jen Romolini.
And Jen, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. I mean, we're on a new recording platform, which is very exciting for both of us.
It actually kind of is exciting.
Much bigger faces than they were. I'm doing great. before we get into it, I'm just doing our bit of housekeeping because we published our first Patreon, exclusive Patreon episode this week. So if you're not at our Patreon, I hope that you will be soon. You can get in there for just $3 or more. There are many different tiers, but we're blogging there almost every day now. So fun.
No, the Patreon has suddenly been enlivened and it's really good. So check it out.
Check it out. Patreon.com/everythingisfine. I'm really good. I'm still recovering from a birthday party I went to over the weekend, which I thought was just, it was a 60th birthday party. And like, I thought, okay, this is just going to be a normal situation, like a 60th birthday party. But instead they were serving alcoholic slushies. It was a hot day.
A little froze.
It was like a gin slushy. And I'll tell you, like I had, because I've really been like monitoring my drinking lately. Like I just, not monitoring lately. Like I just don't want to be drunk. Like it's just not a space I want to be. So I was really careful. I had like 1.5 and I was like, whoa, that's fucking strong. But other moms and dads did not have my same reaction. People were fucking crunk. I'd never seen like 50 and 60 year olds like this in a long time.
They were hilarious. That's hilarious.
It was like a wild party. It's like we forgot we were moms and dads. And it was really like a lot of like just people letting loose, saying how they really felt. It was really funny and fun. And I hadn't been to such a fun party I went to your wedding. I'm not talking about weddings, but I'm talking about just like a backyard party. I mm-hmm. hadn't been to something like that, I think, since I was like 35.
That sounds like heaven.
It really was.
It really sounds so fun. I mean, the mortifyingly drunk part, maybe less so, but it sounds really funny and fun. And like the type of thing that would be like, the premise of like a fantasy sci-fi movie. Yeah. Like it begins with a bunch of adults going completely out of control, drunk at a party. Yes. And then the next thing you know, AI is ruling everything.
Oh, totally. Or like also we could have just all been murdered. It was just like, we were so like drunk and stupid and silly. I mean, I was not, but it was also like really good, like outside food. Like I had, I made deviled eggs, which I always make.
And I saw that you made deviled eggs. And I want you to know we share an affection for deviled eggs.
It's a very specific kind of person who loves a deviled egg. Like,
If it's on a menu, I will get it. Unless I'm on it's some fusion restaurant and they're doing all sorts of crazy shit to it, then I won't get it.
Yeah, I don't want to see a pomegranate seed on on a deviled egg, but I do love a deviled egg generally. But yeah, that was really just fun. I've been trying to chase, but when the fun is there, I'm like, oh, I'm just going to be really present for it. And it was really fun. People were silly.
Well, fun is nutritious.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's so important.
Just like laughing about being old is really cathartic.
No, it really is. It definitely makes it all feel better. It's true.
Yeah. So that was super fun. How was your week?
Oh, my week was fine. You know, quiet. It's been quiet. Everything feels very quiet since the wedding.
Yeah.
But in a good way. And I'm trying to get ahead of a couple projects. You know, it's just raining here. Raining, raining, raining.
Yeah. 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 See, we've sort of just busted out of that. We had months of that. And now it's like, whoa, sunshine and 75 degrees. This is fantastic. You know,
it makes such a difference. It makes such a fucking difference when the weather is good.
It really does.
Now, listen, I want to get a little real here.
Okay, go.
For a minute with a recommendation.
Okay, go.
We're going to talk about painful sexual intercourse.
Oh, it's a little early in the episode. But
I thought I'd dive right in.
Let's dive right in.
Every time I went to see my gynecologist since my, you know, menopause started happening, she would ask me, is sex painful?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, no, thank God, not yet.
Okay.
I went to go see her a little while ago and she's like, is sex painful? And I was like, yes, indeed, sex is painful.
Okay.
And I realize this is a no duh for a lot of you and a lot of you have already, you know, probably do this, but she gave me this estrogen cream, which is something that even if you've had cancer, using it externally is fine. If you have any concerns about it, the external use is fine. And you apply it to your vaginal area.
Oh, the vulva?
Well, you actually, interestingly.
Okay.
With me, and I think it's probably true of many people, like she was like, which part hurts? What inside of you hurts? Mm-hmm. And I told her where it hurt. And she said, that's called the vestibule.
Okay.
The vestibule comes right before all the other big business.
Okay. So you put it, that makes sense. Like the foyer.
Exactly. The foyer. So you put it there. It takes a little while to work. You know, you've got to do it every night religiously for about a month and a half, but then sex stops hurting.
Wow. Wow. So you would say this over, I mean, and maybe in addition to lube.
Lube doesn't take care of the problem.
The pain. Okay.
The pain. It's like, if I can be so frank.
Yeah, you may.
It's like getting fucked by a porcupine dick.
So you could have
all the lube in the world and it's not going to get rid of that particular.
It's not going to take down the quills.
No, it's not going to take down the quills. That's exactly right.
Okay. Oh, wow. So, but what you're saying is that there would be different treatments if it wasn't the foyer. there would be a different treatment to say, like, so I've had pain around my cervix during sex, depending on the size of the penis, the thrust, the position, whatever. I wonder if there are different kinds of treatments or if that's just a size thing. But this is interesting. I wonder if there are different treatments for different areas of sexual pain or where you'd put it, if you'd put a suppository or something, if you were having pain internally.
Yeah, no, I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, interesting. This is another one of those, perhaps an expert.
Perhaps an expert should shine some light on this area we know nothing about.
Some about, but you know, I mean, I've had some really good experiences with cannabis lube. We've talked about that on the podcast before.
Me too.
But this seems next level. But I'm so happy for you that you've solved a really annoying issue.
When sexual intercourse starts hurting, you really, like, I felt so hopeless about it, you know, and just like, okay, well, that was a fun chapter of my life.
Oh, God.
You know, like I really felt that way. Is this the way it's going to feel all the time? And I've got to say, I don't know, maybe I'm sure there are other homeopathic remedies and things that help. But, you know, I had this dog walker once who told me that she didn't believe in Western medicine at all for years.
Okay.
And then she got a headache and she didn't have whatever her homeopathic remedy was. And someone gave her some Advil. And it worked really fast.
Right.
And she was like, I love Western medicine. I was like, in this case, I'm like, I'm such a fan of Western medicine at this moment.
No, I mean, look, I think there are all kinds of things you could, there's like Ayurvedic thing. There's like all kinds of things you can do. There's like, you know, there's like meditations on your yoni. I don't fucking know, you know, but like if something works, it works. And also like you're a newlywed and you know, you want sex to be working.
You want it to be working. You don't want to feel like, okay, this is busted, which is how it felt. Like this is busted up. It's back in the garage. No one ever takes it out anymore.
Busted vagina. Just really renaming the podcast. It's a real, it's funny. The menopause journey, I'm still like, so I think I'm like 9 months since my last period, which is like, oh my God, maybe it's like almost to the end. But this week I'm on hormone replacement therapy. I take all the supplements that I'm supposed to take. I get some acupuncture and I haven't gotten in a while. I'm going to have to go back in. This week it's been a fucking nightmare. I don't know why. I've been shedding hair. I've been like weirdly crampy and sore and tired and hot flashes and like all of it fucking come and like fucking weird tongue shit. Like
tongue shit?
Yes. It's like this weird, like fire mouth tongue. I forget what it's called.
Is that true?
Yes.
Your mouth gets really hot?
Yes. It's just like, it's not that. It's like called burning tongue, I think it is. Like if you really look up these like list of things, like if you're in this stage of life, this perimenopausal stage of life, and you are like, what's going on? And you look up the symptom and you look up the symptom you have plus perimenopause. I guarantee you it will be like, yes, frozen shoulder, which I've also had this week. Like, it's just such a fucking roller coaster because I really thought last month I was feeling so great. And I was like, I'm out. Like, this is fantastic. And then this week it's just like, I just feel like sweaty all the time. My neck was just sweating for no reason. Yeah. Beads of sweat on my fucking neck. Weird. That's strange. It's strange to be walking and having a conversation with somebody, like a normie who is not going through perimenopause, and you're just suddenly like sweat neck. Like
I do have something I have to tell you, though.
Yes.
It doesn't happen. I mean, it doesn't end when you hit menopause. It doesn't end. I'm just saying, like, I there's still some shit.
I mean, I'm sure there's still some shit. This feels like a very big science experiment, but maybe it's just is going to always feel like that. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. So, but yeah, but I'm glad. I always am happy when somebody like solves one of these issues for themselves, no matter, because even if it won't work for me or I'm not having that experience at this time, I'm just like, yay, you know, here we go. Somebody's getting it right.
No, it was a solution. It was a problem. It was a problem. And it turned out to have a really simple solution.
Totally. Totally. I had this thought the other day, which has nothing to do with anything, but I was thinking about a decision I made like 3 years ago. And I was like, God, that was a stupid decision. What the fuck was wrong with me? I can't believe my headspace. And I realized something, which is that aging and getting older is just this feeling of disbelief of like, I was just an idiot. Like it's always, I can't believe what an idiot I just was. And it's just again and again, I suspect forever. It's why older women write into the podcast when they hear me talking and they're like, Jesus Christ, she's an idiot. Like somebody who's 65 is like, what the fuck are you? Because you get wiser And it's like every year, it's incremental. You get wiser every single year and you can't believe yourself like 6 months ago. It's crazy.
Oh, I can't believe myself 3 days ago.
I know.
With me, it's always, almost always something I said.
Yes.
You know, not something I did, not a decision I made, although I made some Lulus. You know, I haven't been waiting to use the word Lulu, but it almost as though I was.
Oh, really? I really was like, she's been had that in her pocket. Like that's the word. No,
I've made some bad decisions, but it's almost always, I can still think of certain things that happened 15, 20 years ago. And like things I said that I wish like a hole would open up in the ground and I could fall through it.
No, I mean, I can tell now that I'm making decisions that I'm going to regret, like in real time. And they usually revolve around beef, like just like beef with other people, resentments, just like pettiness. It's yeah. usually pettiness that I can't get over for some reason. Like I can't, I just am like, oh, fuck that person. And like that is, that fuck that person is never leads to anything good.
No, it's the, you know, the great saying, holding on to anger is like taking poison and waiting for the other person to die.
Totally. Totally. But at the same time, I feel like there's a part of me that feels like, who would I even be without it?
Well, I was about to say, like, anger gives me life sometimes.
Yes.
But it's knowing what kind of anger. You know, there's anger that can be motivating and galvanizing, and there's anger that is only going to be corrosive.
I guess. And we've tried to have this conversation before because there's no answer to it, right? I mean, there's no, like, what do you do with assholes? Like, that is really the question, because the question is, like, so many people just misbehave and just are like, they're not self-aware enough to just sort of be in the world, or they fuck you over. And like, are you supposed to have compassion for those people? Because I can see what people's motivations are when they're fucking around. I mean, and I would want compassion if I wasn't self-aware enough, or I was still on like a journey of self-discovery or whatever. But like, I have a hard time with that initial compassion, because I immediately go to, what the fuck is wrong with you? Which is not my greatest trait.
I understand. It makes me think of, and we've talked about this on the show before, the loving kindness meditation.
Yes.
Which is so hard. You start out and you think of, I'm probably getting this slightly wrong, but you think of someone you love and care about. Then you yes. think of somebody you have, you know, neutral feelings for, and then somebody who you maybe have complicated feelings for. Yes. You try to bring compassion to all of these people. And then the last rung on the ladder is having compassion for somebody you really have trouble with.
Yes.
And sometimes I can do that, and sometimes I can't do that. That's yeah. just sort of how it feels. It, and sometimes I can have compassion. I was talking to you about somebody recently and you said, oh, but these are their circumstances.
Yes.
You know, you got to have some compassion. And I was like, yes, but I think that person might also be an asshole.
Yes.
In addition. And that's just true a lot of the time.
Yeah. And it is true a lot of the time. And it's also a situation of like, oh, I don't know. The problem is for me is that I can't be neutral. It's just like my everything's written on my face. I have a very difficult time being what I consider to be a fake. You know, I even had an argument with my husband this week because I just said a very blunt thing to him that hurt his feelings. I wasn't wrong, but I just like blurted out the thing like, well, you can't do that. You know, that's not going to work. And he was like, what the fuck? And I was like, but I told you the truth, but sometimes people don't want the truth. It's a mess.
Well, and it goes back to what we were talking about at the live episode about the whole idea of being a bitch, thinking of yourself as a bitch, other people thinking of you as a bitch, and what a bitch really is. And sometimes a bitch is just somebody who is honest and maybe in not the ideal tone of voice.
Yes, there we go. And without using the I statements.
Yes.
Oh my God. Speaking of people who are not as nice as they pretended to be, which we were not, but we were both excited to talk about John Mulaney this week.
Oh my God, that's special.
Baby J. I think it's on Netflix, right?
It is on Netflix. And it is, I've always liked John Mulaney. But he does something. He goes to a different place in this one, because since his last special, he got divorced, went to rehab. And he talks about a lot of it. He doesn't talk about the divorce, and he doesn't talk about his new relationship, really. He mentions his baby, but he talks a great deal about rehab and his intervention.
Yes.
I was trying to take notes as I was watching it. Like, I got to mention this line. I got to mention this line.
Yes.
But I don't want to mention any lines because you guys just have to experience this. It was so, and the way he talked, as somebody who has lost the thread in life.
Yes.
When he was talking about the intervention, I found it almost painful.
Yeah.
Because I could, you know, I've never been the subject of an intervention, but I did, like, you know, I did lose the thread in a meaningful way, and my friends and family got together to discuss what to do about it. And the way he reacts to the people at the intervention is so true to a person who's in pain and denial that I found it almost hard to watch.
So, yes, I found it hard to watch too in some ways, but I mean, that was sort of the mastery of it, right? So we should first say, like, I was, before I was going to watch this show, I think we need to acknowledge this. You know, I was like, is John Mulaney canceled? How are we feeling about John Mulaney? He did invite Dave Chappelle to open for him. Yeah. Dave Chappelle in this show told many transphobic jokes. You know, whether you decide to attach that to John Mulaney or not, some people have. I have mixed feelings about it.
Yeah.
And part of the reason that I was kind of able to watch the show, and what one of the reasons I was curious about it, was because I thought what he did in this show was interesting, and I wanted to watch somebody do it, which is, John Mulaney was somebody that was so revered, especially by generations younger than us. You know, he's a wife guy, he's a sweetheart, he's squeaky clean, you know, he's all of these things. And he comes out in this special and he says, likeability is a jail, and look, I'm actually kind of a prick. And I think that this, I think what he does there is interesting. And he's like talking about self-loathing. He's talking about, you know what? Nobody, he was talking about cancel culture a little bit. And he was like, nobody can do anything worse to me than I would do to myself, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
You know, cancel John Mulaney, I'll kill him, you know? But he's really breaking down the persona and this projection we put onto famous people, you know, this projected identity. And sounds like he was an asshole. Selfish. I mean, addicts are selfish as fuck.
Addicts. I mean, I saw it slightly differently. He was absolutely an asshole.
Yeah.
I think because I personally found like a through line, you know, as something I related to in it, I saw it more as him showing how fucking human he was. And because, or just how he showed the humanity of the addict to me. And because I could see when he's making these, you know, ridiculous statements to the people at his intervention.
Yeah.
And all I could think was like, he's the one in the room in pain.
Yes. Yes. I think that's right. I think that's right. I mean, does that justify poor judgment in sobriety? No.
No.
I think that he is so smart and obviously so tortured. I mean, you know, like very many smart people are.
And like comedians.
And comedians, writers, you know, just creative people. And it's a really gorgeous like hour and a half, and it went by like a fucking lightning bolt. You know, it's longer than most comedy specials, but the pacing is, and just to watch somebody have crafted something like this, that's bringing you in and then making you laugh. And then it's very painful and tender, but it's also ugly. I mean, that's interesting.
And I love the way he chose to end it, which doesn't spoil anything for anyone. He reads from a Q&A he did for GQ magazine that he does not remember ever giving.
Oh my God.
And he so tells on himself. I don't know what I'm, you know, he made himself look like he was like, yes, if you think everyone in Hollywood is a you know, arrogant, manic asshole, like based on me, you're right. You know?
Yeah. The other thing, the other comedy I saw this week, which if nobody knows Sarah Schaefer, I went to see a Sarah Schaefer show. She is this comedian who's been, this female comic who's been around for, you know, I think like 20 years, has never really broken through in like a major, major way. And she did this show, this like one woman show about not breaking through and about what that looks like. And it was a very small venue. It was the Elysian Theater here. And she's just a genius. And I don't really know how to talk about it more, but it like was talking about like her inner heckler. And it like, it was like a fake Scientology course. It was really just like, it was so smart and she was so good. And I want to have her on the show. She was really amazing. That's the stuff I've been doing. I've also been thinking, you go, your turn.
Oh, well, I was thinking about this show that I watched, which I like. You know, Paul is really into, he likes sci-fi and fantasy, a category that I had effectively avoided my entire life and have no interest in. But I watch shows with him sometimes. Like I watched Watchmen, which only had one season, which was really amazing. And The Leftovers, which is fantasy or whatever. But
yeah, Leftovers a great show. Yeah.
So Damon Lindelof, the guy who did those shows, started a show called Mrs. Davis.
Yes.
And it stars Betty Gilpin, who was in our friend Liz's show, Glow.
Glow, and who is just amazing. She was also in Roar, Liz's show, Roar. Like, Betty Gilpin is the best.
And a very talented writer on top of it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
She plays a nun. I can't explain it very well because I don't understand it very well. She plays a nun. The world is in the thrall of an AI algorithm.
Yes. Okay.
She is the only person who will not speak to the algorithm. And she has been summoned to find the Holy Grail, the literal Holy Grail, so that she could, that is somehow going to make the AI no longer rule the world.
Right. Right. Okay.
And it's just a crazy fucking show. It's just a crazy fucking show, but she like, not just any actress could like take on this crazy role, and she does it so well. I think she probably is a little nuts, you know? Like,
yes, yeah, yeah, and she looks amazing. She looks amazing in it. Like, and her habit is a jumpsuit, which is just like it's like a culottes jumpsuit. I don't know if you picked that up. Like, it just makes her such like a no, and she's so tough, and her face like is amazing to watch. Yeah. I mean. I watched the pilot of it and I was like, I don't know if I'll watch more of this because of what you, just because the sci-fi element, I don't know, but it's also a beautiful show. It's like a very, like the production is gorgeous, I thought, you know, totally recommend that show. I think it's good. Let's take a quick break from some ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we're back. Speaking of recommendations, because I have a list of recommendations that we have for this week, and this is the last one on it. I have been very into dry shampoo lately. I think that everybody, if you are losing your hair, please don't sleep on dry shampoo because you can't wash your hair very often at this age. You just cannot be washing your fucking hair because it's just falling out all over the place. Like, you have to keep that wash going for like 4 or 5 days.
You know, when you have a bummer thing to tell a friend and you're kind of psyched to tell them? You're like, they didn't know this thing. I'm about to tell them and bum them out.
Okay, yes, go.
Dry shampoo can make your hair fall out. Yeah.
No.
Because what people do is they keep putting it in and it gets in the way of nutrients that have to get into your scalp. Google it, guys.
Oh my God. So my tip for not losing hair.
Well, I think it's okay to use it. I think you gotta shampoo it out. Otherwise, and you gotta have times you don't have it in because otherwise your hair doesn't get the nutrition it needs.
Oh my, your scalp doesn't get the nutrition. Yes. Wow. Okay. You're blowing my mind up now. Okay. So let's just cancel my recommendation and listen to Kim.
Or use it, because dry shampoo is really handy. If you use it every once in a while, I don't think your hair is going to fall out. If you're a compulsive user of it, then
I've been going crazy. Maybe that's why my hair has been like, I've been like shedding again.
I don't know. I don't know if it would happen that fast. Who knows?
It's been like a month. It's been like a month where I was like never washing my hair again.
I could have told you this off show. I could have sent you a text. We text all week.
But I don't somehow care. I love it. Oh, somehow you were like, you knew what we were going to talk about this on the show and you were going to bomb me with it.
Yes. What's wrong with me?
Oh, you're a sadist. I love it. don't use dry shampoo. I take it all back.
Use it moderately.
Moderately. That makes sense. That makes sense to me. All right. Well, listen, should we get into listener questions? Oh, by the way, listeners, next week we're going to have, I'm going to put it on social media. We're going to have a call-in number where you can actually ask us questions on our Google answering service.
With your real voice.
With your real voice. We want to start doing segments where we bring listener voices into the show. So next week, and I'll put this on social media and I'll put it in the show notes, we're going to have a call-in number. You can call us. You can ask us questions there. We will play them on air and we will then answer those questions on air. How fun. But for now, it's just all in, you know, typing and paper. All right. Would you care to go first?
Questions. Okay. Here's our first question. How much does it really hurt to get a tattoo? I'm almost 51 and my daughter wants to get matching tattoos, very small, on our wrists. Tell me the truth. Is it worth it? What I would say to that is that it depends on where on your body you want to get the tattoo. The closer it is to a bone, the more it's going to hurt. So the wrist would actually be a medium painful place. But if you're just getting a tattoo somewhere where there isn't really bone, it feels like a bikini wax or less even.
Doesn't hurt at all. I mean, and I've gotten all of mine are stick and poke and I think they're supposed to hurt more and it didn't hurt. The problem is that you're going to get addicted to getting tattoos and you're just going to be like, oh, once you break the seal, then you're like more tattoos and then you get yourself into trouble.
100%. 100%. It's not having the tattoo that's the thing. It's the getting the tattoo. And you become a little addicted to the experience of going and doing it.
Because it's so intimate. Mine were all done by hot young men. And I was like, oh, this is a very sexy experience I'm having right now. And then you get one tattoo that you regret. What eventually happens is you get the one where you're like, I didn't need that tattoo.
Yeah, no, it happens. I've got one or two that I would, you know, if getting them removed wasn't so colossally painful.
That's it.
That I would consider getting removed.
And then I look at it and I'm like, could I get it covered? That's just going to make this whole situation worse.
So much. I got a tattoo covered though.
You did? Oh, yeah. That's right. You did. You got the horseshoe covered.
I got the horseshoe covered. It turned into a snake.
I liked the horseshoe. I don't understand what was wrong with the horseshoe.
The horseshoe had to do with my marriage.
Oh.
My first marriage. So I didn't, it reminded me of that. And even though I could never see it because it was on my shoulder blade, I also wouldn't have gotten a tattoo on my shoulder blade.
Yeah.
Because that's a pretty part of a woman's body. I mean, no, you know, nothing on people who get them there. It just, I would have liked that to remain kind of.
Not like free, just skin.
Just skin. But I got this tattoo, my stupidest tattoo.
I think I got it
for a good reason, which was that I was reading this, you know, letter. Letter from a Birmingham prison written by Martin Luther King. And he talks a lot about having seen fire hoses, you know, fired at children and all the other crap that he's seen that's been horrible, but that he still believes in love and he'll stick with love every time. And so I decided I wanted a tattoo that said choose love because I found that really meaningful.
Yeah.
But now I have a tattoo that says choose love. And it's not like I can say, oh, by the way, it was because of this Martin Luther King thing that I have this. So it's just there, a dumb tattoo that says choose love on my wrist. What am I going to do?
I got these birds on my arm and I didn't, because the thing is about tattoos, you don't know what they're going to look like in different positions of your body.
That's true.
And like sometimes like the birds look very cute and normal. And sometimes they just look like these giant, flabby, like aging birds. Like if I flex my arm, they're disgusting. I hate them so fucking much. I look at, and they're right there. Like it's a bad place for a tattoo. It's like right on my forearm. I cannot avoid looking at it. And like, I hate it. And like, also it like symbolizes monogamy, and which I wasn't thinking about. And like, sometimes I'm like thinking about my husband. I'm like, look at this fucking tattoo. Like, it's just like, I feel like it's like a love prison on my arm. I hate it. I hate it. And I haven't figured out what to cover it with yet, but
covering is tricky because you end up getting something bigger.
Yes, yes. Although I will say, like, I've been seeing some very big tattoos on women lately and being like, that is a cool, like, that is, like, I've been wanting to go bold. But see, you just don't know what you're going to regret. I thought getting them older would mean that I wouldn't regret them. But, like, you still live years. Like, you still.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, who knows how I'll feel when I'm 75, but my biggest tattoo is my favorite tattoo.
Oh, you have that cool, the Liberty of London tattoo, that one, the flowers. Yeah, that's a good tattoo. That's a good tattoo.
It's nice. It needs some touch-ups. That's the other thing about tattoos. You got to go do the touch-ups.
Well, if you get them in color, I won't get color tattoos because I'm afraid that they'll make my, because you know how I dress like a clown and I cannot have like a bright colored tattoo that would then clash with every fucking thing I ever wear.
Once a few years ago when nail art was still a thing, I went and got some silly nail art with like snakes on it or something. And I saw my older brother Mike that night and he was like, aren't the tattoos enough? That's such shame.
You're just like, just look at me, okay? It doesn't like, please. Does it not obvious that I need attention? Like,
oh my God. Okay. Would I be screaming it any louder?
Exactly. Sorry. Okay. Okay. Another question. I attended the live show and was able to witness the admiration Kim has towards her mom. But I also remember Kim talking about her mom's shortfalls in motherhood. At what age were you able to forgive her and move on to your current relationship status? I totally understand if you decline to engage. It might be a tad too personal to share. Nonetheless, I'm intrigued.
I mean, a year ago, 6 months ago, yesterday, like it's hard to say, you know, I think that when I reach my 50s, and my mother was getting into her late 70s, early 80s, I realized, like, number one, she's an excellent grandmother.
Yeah.
She's really there for my nephews and has relationships with them that are so different than the relationship I had with any of my grandparents.
Yep.
And they really know each other, and she really, you know, she puts in the time. And then, you know, a lot of it was, you know, trying to have some empathy for her.
Yeah.
And whatever she was going to. And then finally, just realizing like she's not going to change. Like she, however she is, like this is just the person she is. It's why I could, you know, not flip out about the pink and purple and So It Begins neon sign, because I think she is. I mean, I like her. And I think that was a big part of it too. When I realized that I liked her, then I think our relationship changed.
Do you think that she's taken accountability for, because I feel like a lot of this has to do with accountability and how much they're able to take about what happened in your childhood. I feel like that helps a lot, you know?
And she does. She does. She has very specific, very painful memories of not being there for me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I remember laying into her. I was in my 40s, I think. I remember where I was just laying into her about the ways she wasn't there for me. And she's like, you know what, Kim? I have felt bad about that for long enough.
Yeah, I've heard her say statute of limitations on like parental crimes. Yep.
You know, and I feel like, you know, that used to just piss me off because I'd say I'm only beginning to feel my real anger about it. But I know that my mother felt real and sincere sadness and regret and shame over how she raised us. And she wasn't absent. She was just not, you know, we were wild animals. We raised ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, obviously my mom's situation is maybe a little more complicated. I think that you can forgive and still feel sore.
Yep.
And that the soreness might never, depending on the issues were and whatever the sort of shortfalls, as this listener says, were, and how severe they were, you might never get over grieving the childhood you didn't have.
Right. And the whole expression forgive and forget is unrealistic.
It's just unrealistic.
You don't forget. You may forgive, you don't forget.
And I have a lot of compassion for both of my parents. And I know, like, how the fuck could you know how to be a parent when you weren't even a legal adult? Like, I get it. Nobody asked me, but I'm just going to say there's like so much tenderness for me, but also soreness. And also, I don't know that my parents have ever really seen my pain, at least adequately for me. Like, mm-hmm. It has not been adequate. So I forgive them and I love them and I love them in the present. And it's my job to deal with the past. We're never going to have resolution about the past because you know, my mom's attitude is like, I remember like bringing some shit up at 42 and she was like, you're 42, get over it. And I was like, not yet. Sorry.
You know, and I get that. I get that so much. Like that anger, that like, you know, wait, you know, you were not there to protect me kind of feeling. And at the same time, I think I know people who still blame everything on their parents.
Yes.
Or
yes.
their childhood. And I feel like that's unacceptable. In all but the most like, you know, really.
It's like everybody's on their own journey, let's say, with this stuff. But I know as a parent and how much I have to take accountability every goddamn day. And it doesn't matter if I was wrong or right or my child was this or, you know, whatever. I get called out all the time by my kid. And it's like that rupture and repair. I'm constantly repairing. I feel like apologies are free and accountability is fairly easy. What it does is accountability brings up a lot of shame and that's your shit to deal with, you know, but at the same time, I understand your mom's position of being like, can we just move on so we can have a relationship? Like how much longer are we going to have together to have this relationship? Can we, you know?
And that is what it comes down to. And the other part of it is that the anger ebbs and flows, you know, it really depends on what's going on in your life.
Yeah.
And if you're feeling, and I was when the mother and I had that talk, like nothing was going right and nothing ever was, I really felt like, you know, I lay this at the feet of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is not, you know, they have to take accountability, but we also have to take accountability. We are adults and we are not going to be reparented by them in midlife. It's like we get to do that for ourselves. They can't do that. That's over.
Yeah.
You know, we got what we got and that's over. So it's like, how do you bring this sort of like mess of memories and, you know, anger and everything? How do you sort of bring that into the present and try to have a relationship? I don't know, but this is an interesting question we could probably talk about for hours.
Okay. I will ask the next one. What do you think of Anna Wintour, the devil or icon?
Well, I interestingly, just did an episode of the other podcast I did, Stiffed, about her. Like I really did a deep dive into who she was as a younger woman because she worked at that porn magazine, Viva, that podcast is about. She was the fashion and beauty editor, one of them. She was an asshole then too.
I believe it.
She was a jerk. She was always kind of a pretentious jerk, but she had a lot of vision and she, you know, she just had a lot of drive and a lot of vision. And there's some part of me that has to like, all respect. I just don't think she would be very fun to know.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that she is both an icon and the devil. She just is. I've heard, you know, I heard too many stories about how she treated her assistants.
Yep. Oh, yes.
And there is something very particular when, you know, you're batting down or you're punching down. She punches down. And I, you know, I was not a perfect boss, but I really tried not to do that shit. Not always successfully, but I don't think I wasn't. Yeah. It's funny because the Met Ball was last night. It will have been a week ago. And I went to the Met Ball a couple times.
Which is crazy to me.
And early, I mean, you know, in the early 2000s, before it was quite the big deal it is now. It was still a big deal. But I was with my boss, James, and you walk up the steps and then you are to go through the receiving line. And the receiving line is Anna and whoever's hosting the event with her.
Wow.
Which the first year I went was Caroline Kennedy.
Wow.
Caroline Kennedy, the daughter of a Kennedy, shakes my hand and says, you know, it's very nice. I move on. And I say to James, like, I'm going to go introduce myself to Anna. I had never met her. And he said, you don't want to do that. And I was like, no, I kind of do. So I run off to do it. Mm-hmm. And I once read Paulina Porizkova describe this thing that Anna Wintour does that she also did to me, which is I said, hi, I'm Kim France. I'm the editor of Lucky. She didn't say a word to me. She didn't look at me and she didn't not look at me. She made this weird snubbing gesture and moved on.
Oh.
And I think that from what I heard about people who worked with her, that she could make you feel like an absolute mass of hemoglobin really easily. And that's just something I can't respect. As powerful as she is, and I think she's probably one of the most powerful women in the world, you know, even now as magazines are nothing.
Right. But at what cost? Like that's too much collect. That's too much cost to like, you've hurt too many people.
I agree. And I will say, and then I'm going to stop my shit talking.
Mm-hmm.
I would occasionally during the fashion week, you know, there were cars going everywhere and there were always editors who needed a ride. And occasionally, you know, I knew a few people who worked at Vogue and occasionally I would like share my car with them to go to the next show.
Mm-hmm.
They were all so obsessed with her. It was the first topic they went to.
Yeah. I mean, look, I tried to interview her former assistants from Viva and I tracked her down. It was like really hard to track her down. I tracked her down and she was still so scared of Anna Wintour, she wouldn't talk to me on the record.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
This is 50 years later, she wouldn't talk to me on the record.
I think that is the really dangerous part of it. Is that you also, like, I know how people, nobody would ever leave Vogue, no matter how miserable they were, because it was like the New York Times, where are you going to go?
Yeah.
You know, that was the whole attitude. And so they stuck it out in this place that sounded like, you know, miserable.
I know. It's interesting though, because it gets into like the idea of female power. Like if she was a man, would we be having this kind of conversation? You know, no, but that doesn't make it okay.
And don't we expect better from women?
Yeah. Well, don't we expect better from fucking everybody? But like, and that idea that like, only I know best, that top-down management style, it's so dated at this point. Like, you know, sure, it made her successful, but like I said, like at what cost and like, what's great about that?
Yeah.
There's nothing great about that. Cause I don't think she was that great to Andre Leon Talley either. Like,
no, she was really not in the
end.
Know?
Yeah.
He was paying for car service to drive him into the city to help her with her fittings.
Fuck that.
She wasn't even sending a car for him.
And I'm sure, you know, people who know her intimately, but look, I couldn't find one. I couldn't find one that was like, you know what, actually, you've missed it here.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I read her biography that Amy O'Dell wrote that came out.
Oh yeah, Anna,
this year.
Really good. Yeah,
it's a really good biography, but she made a conscious choice not to go the like, you know, gossipy, bitchy route with her.
Yeah.
But to like treat her like a really important business person.
Which is fair.
I mean, I miss the gossipy stuff. That would have been fun. But I understood why she, and Anna cooperated with her. Anna gave her all these people to talk to.
Yes.
But I think, you know, what that ensured was that we weren't getting the other side of the story too.
I think that's right. And I think that, you know, look, being sort of Machiavellian and, you know, being a very shrewd business person, it's going to get you a lot of success. Like, you know, and she had enough. I think she had more business savvy or has more business savvy than she even had fashion talent, honestly.
Oh, for sure.
Right. And I think, you know, that's the thing on her. I wouldn't want that.
I always said that or thought that because when James Truman left Condé Nast there, then they needed to hire a new editorial director, I thought they could very well give this job to Anna. They didn't at the time. They gave it to her later. And I thought, I'll have to leave my job. I really thought like there was no way I was a square peg and she was a round hole. And there was no way that was ever going to work. And it wasn't even like a knock on, you know, I mean, we've been knocking her, but it wasn't as much a knock on her as just knowing what I could handle.
I don't think we're knocking her. I think we're knocking the sort of like this kind of success, what this looks like. Like, her success is unimpeachable and her business savvy is, you know, obvious, like clearly. It's just that there's too much collateral damage to my mind.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, one more question. My very favorite neighborhood shoe store, RIP Imelda's in Portland, Oregon, closed this year. How will I possibly find my sandals for this summer? I have weird feet, so it's hard to shop online unless I know the brand well. I need something that goes with everything, but I'm not afraid of color. Lowish because I walk a lot, but can have a small wedge or platform. Also a bonus if you can provide a recommendation for a throw-on to go out the door pair of slides. So first off, I think Aerosoles are doing a great job this season. Like Aerosoles has amazing shoes right now.
Naturalizer too. I actually looked at them a lot because I bought a pair of Naturalizer shoes to wear to my wedding, which I ended up not wearing because I changed dresses. But really, really comfortable and surprisingly like cool.
Yes, yes, yes. And not that expensive either.
No, not that expensive.
I also think... is it Sorel? Sorel?
I don't know how you pronounce it.
Whatever. Sorel. They have some really cool, like chunky sandals right now that I think are really excellent. And in terms of slides, I don't know. I mean, it's the Birkenstocks is making a million different kinds of slides that are super going to be super comfortable for mostly all feet, I think.
Yeah. No, I was going to say Birkenstocks too. That's really the answer there. And a lot of people make Birkenstock-like shoes now, too, that are a little more, I mean, they've gotten more stylish, but then there are also more stylish versions.
But yeah, I think if I was looking for this, I mean, there's also, what is it, Worishoffer? Those like orthopedic shoes?
Oh yeah, the ones that had a big moment in the aughts.
Yes, and I think they're going to have a big moment again, is my opinion. But Worishoffer is also, and they make real, I mean, those shoes are really cute, very French looking.
Adorable. Maybe I'll get some of those before I go to Europe. That's a good idea.
That's what I think you should do. And yeah, absolutely. Because actually right now, and I was about to put this on the Patreon, which I'll do it pre this episode, so you'll get it early, everyone. They have an incredible, or number six clogs has put up like a tie-up clog that's so cute that you slip right into. Worishoffer for $85 has almost the exact same shoe and they look much more comfortable because they have a cork sole.
Right, right. No, so, Worishoffers are great. I'm gonna like fucking go buy some Morris Offers when we're done doing this. I'm completely motivated.
I think you should. And that's the show.
That is the show. As it happens.
Thanks for listening to Everything Is Fine. We are your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
If you like the show, please rate and review it across the platforms, but especially Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. It really makes a difference to our listenership. If you want to support the production of the show, please join our Patreon. As I said at the beginning, it's patreon.com/everythingisfine. You can join for just $3. You can join for more if you want. We do live events there, we blog there, and we are now doing special bonus episodes there. If you want to follow us on social media, we're on Instagram at EIF Podcast. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook with a robust and private Facebook group. We're also on LinkedIn for no reason, and we don't know why. You can find Kim on her blog, girlsofacertainage.com. You can find me at tinyletter.com/Jennifer Romolini, but mostly I'm writing on our Patreon right now. Our show is mixed and edited by the wonderful Natalie Rivera. Thank you, Natalie, and we'll be back next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.